Salutations to visitors and registered guests, and welcome to the campus of Nemata. This is a special orientation message about the necessity of self-love. Now, that is an issue which underpins a lot of the material you find here on Nemata. It is, you could say, a founding premise. Where do you find it? Well, on the landing page of visitors and the landing page of Planetary Tantra, which are open to anyone who cares to come to the campus. You don't have to be a faculty member to access those pages and those units. Also, if you put self-love in the search bar, it will bring up a number of units where I treat that topic. To begin, I would like to tell you briefly and precisely what you find when you come to Nemata. And then in turn, you will be able to see how self-love fits into the overall program. If you consider Nemata to be like a great banyan tree, with the trunks being different classes, different topics, then you might consider that self-love is something like a lotus, a beautiful flower that you encounter here and there as you wander among the trunks of the banyan tree. Personally, I find this to be a lovely analogy, and I might remind you that the lotus flower grows in mud. So, all of the vast and diverse material you find in Nemata arises or derives from two objectives, two goals. These are my goals in creating the school. First goal is to teach Planetary Tantra, and that is all free. The second goal is to restore the humanities. That really is the totality of it. Of it all, there you have a statement of my objectives. Now let's consider for a moment the presentation of Planetary Tantra. Well, it's an in-life practice. Remember that Nemata is the online portal to an in-life experiment. And at the core of this experiment, the divine experiment in which you live, is the practice of Planetary Tantra. It's impossible to understand or pursue that practice without the framework of the fallen goddess scenario. So there is a master narrative for Planetary Tantra. It is a unique myth, an exceptional myth, that stands completely apart from every other so-called creation myth ever produced by human imagination. It is quite explicitly and literally the biography of the living planet, Gaia. You can say that it is the mythopoetic elaboration of the Gaia hypothesis, which emerged in the 1970s at the same time that the Nag Hammadi codices in English were published. The FGS is a restoration of the sacred narrative of the pre-Christian Gnostic and pagan mysteries. And the FGS places you, a human animal, in a cosmic perspective. It explains your origins. More precisely, it explains the origin of the human genome. Now, we'll get back to that point in a moment. Humans are storytelling animals. Every day of your life, you tell yourself a story about that day, and you remember previous stories about how you have lived. So, the FGS is the comprehensive story that frames this adventure we call life. And within the context of the FGS, you learn that you are living in a divine experiment. You learn who designed and originated the human genome, and you learn the conditions of the experiment, and you learn as well how Sophia, who designed the genome with her counterpart, Thelite, turned into the Earth so that she came to be the very setting of the divine experiment in which you live. These are wonderful things that you learn from the study of the fallen goddess scenario, and to my knowledge, you cannot learn them anywhere else. So, planetary tantra, or Gayan tantra, is the set of practices for living in that scenario, living that narrative, living that myth. And in that sense, it can be compared to computer games. It can be compared to interactive computer games, of which there are, of course, hundreds, which involve millions and millions of players and participants around the world. Well, now, since 2008, there is a new movement. We see the emergence of players and participants who live out this sacred narrative. One of the words that they use for these computer video games, adult fantasy games, whatever you want to call them, is immersive. It is said that a good game that you play on a computer looking at a screen is immersive. It means that it's designed in such a way that the story, the characters, the plot, the challenges of that video game allow the player to be immersed in it as if it were a reality. But of course, it is not real. It is simply a virtual game. But the Fallen Goddess scenario immerses you in a real game, in a living, natural game. I would go so far as to say, in a dynamic, natural, and supernatural game. You are not merely playing this game by staring at a computer screen. You play it by looking at your life as you live it day to day and looking at the setting of your life, the terrestrial habitat, which is in fact an expression of the body of your divine mother, the Aeon Sophia. You do not use some handheld instrument that works with opposing thumbs to play the game. Your body itself is the instrument for playing the game. So the Fallen Goddess scenario is truly, genuinely, and provably immersive. And it is also pragmatic. The practices of planetary tantra are all practical and pragmatic practices that can be shared and proven and corroborated among those who undertake them. Now you may wonder, how does self-love figure into the fallen goddess scenario on the one hand, or the practices of planetary tantra on the other, or the objective to restore the humanities? Well, I mentioned the genome. So let's look at this concept of the genome. I assure you that by looking carefully into what is said to be the human genome, you can reach a concept of self-love that is unique and outstanding. Now, you've probably heard of the Human Genome Project, and it is said that that project has been completed and that biologists, evolutionary biologists, genealogists, and so forth have mapped the human genome. Well, in the first place, this is not correct. They have not mapped the human genome. They have constructed a complex map based on the investigation of the genomic identity of one human animal, Richard Seed. They could not have based the decoding of the human genome on a study of the generic genome, because there is no evidence of a generic genome on Earth. You see? The master template, or the generic human genome, does not exist on Earth in a pure and unadulterated form. It only exists in variations, namely racial variations and then individual variations. So it's not true that scientists have plotted and decoded all of the triplets, the 64 code units of DNA of the human genome. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt, and let's say that they have been able to approximate it by investigating an individual item, an individual genome. So what do they find? Well, they find that now they can identify segments of the genetic code, and they can associate them with diseases and functions of the human brain and body. For instance, they claim to be able to identify the segment of the genetic code that causes, Tay-Sachs disease, or that causes cancer, that causes schizophrenia. They make all kinds of wild claims based on the Human Genome Project. And in fact, they have there's a business aspect to this, because as the project developed, certain corporations came in and they bought segments of the human genome and trademarked them to use for medical purposes, presumably. So there is a vast amount of material in the description of the human genome that specifically names diseases, functions of the body, and functions of the brain. And they claim that these coded segments of the genome support those functions. It's like in computer jargon saying that a certain section of source code supports an application, right? So they have identified the applications of the human genome. But what they have not done, and you may find that interesting and valuable, I don't know, but what they have not done is, to my mind, even more interesting. You see, although they can identify a segment of the human genome, of the genetic code, and associated it with some bodily function, or malfunction, they cannot describe how human values and qualities and talents and skills arise from the human genome. For instance, they cannot identify a segment of genetic code that supports the application of skill in drawing, or skill in mathematics, or any other talent that you can name, any other talent that comes to expression in the arts and sciences, in the record of human achievements. They cannot designate sections of the genetic code equivalent to these talents. So, a little side note here, without going into a digression, there is actually a code that can designate that in a certain way, and that is the source code of Celestex, which is written in 256 lines of code, which can describe and do describe not only innate human skills and talents, but the optimal manner in which these skills and talents can be brought to expression by the individual who has them. That is a grandiose statement. Believe me, I know. But I can assure you that it's provable. And I also want to emphasize that the concept behind that statement belongs in the Fallen Guard scenario. So the narrative says that Sophia and Thelite, who are divine powers inhabiting the galactic center, designed the human genome in the galactic center. And when they did so, they calibrated it with seven particular talents. So the story of the genome comes out of the FGS. And that is a very big story, and there is a great deal to learn about how the genome was calibrated and what are those seven key talents. So now we come to self-love. And with the foregoing being said, let's ask the question together. Is self-love calibrated in the human genome? Or is love and compassion, are love and compassion calibrated in the human genome? Are they innate qualities and capacities of the human animal that are actually present due to passages of the genomic code? Good question. Have you ever heard anyone ask that question before? Well, as a matter of fact, there are many who have asked that question through the ages, and they belong to those exemplary figures of the humanities who form a huge part of the material on Nemeta. The question of what is human nature? And the question, is human nature essentially good, has been an issue debated through the ages. Now, if you go back and you look at the Roman emperor, Marcus Aurelius, who belonged to the Stoic school of philosophy, which was a pagan, pre-Christian, pre-Abrahamic philosophy, you find that he openly states in his Meditations that human nature is essentially good, and that it is within our nature to help each other. This is a premise. And later on, when you come forward, say, into the period of Romanticism, you find the debate around Jean-Jacques Rousseau. So he was a Romantic philosopher who proposed the idea of the noble savage, and he assumed that humans are essentially good. Other philosophers have assumed that humans are not essentially good. And this is a big debate that has raged on through the ages. I can tell you now that there is a simple solution to this debate. So listen closely. Gayantandra teaches that the calibration of the human genome does contain potentially the capacities for love, compassion, and mutual aid. It does contain the attributes of what we call human goodness. However, those attributes cannot be effective without the foundation of self-love to support them. So self-love is what you might compare to the driver of the innate goodness of the human animal. So the debate about is humanity good or is humanity not good, essentially, takes second place to the deeper investigation, you see. In fact, that debate can never be resolved without bringing the issue of self-love into it. hence the necessity of self-love. Now, if you're following me, and I'm getting to the conclusion, you might have thought of this question. Well, is the capacity for self-love inherent to the human genome? If I'm saying that the other attributes of human goodness, kindness, mutual aid, compassion, that sort of thing, if those attributes need the driver of self-love, then is that driver installed in the human genome? And the answer is no. No, it is not. Consider what I'm saying. All those attributes of human goodness are inherent in the genome, along with the moral and creative talents of the human animal. But in order to be active, they require the foundation of self-love, which is not inherent in the genome. So here's the takeaway. I'll put it in a way that I have already done, I believe, on several occasions. I've said that when you recognize that the Aeon Sophia, the divine, superhuman, non-human power on the galactic scale is actually your divine mother, she actually designed the human genome. And when you realize that she is also the setting of this divine experiment, she is embodied in nature. Her presence is imminent in every event in the natural world, from the microbial level, the activity in the oceans and the clear water bodies, the activity of the minerals of the earth, the activity of the fauna and flora, and of the atmosphere. She is present. You learn in planetary tantra how to detect her presence and how to communicate with her presence in the natural world. And when you learn that, you must admit, if you accept it, that everything that you know and have comes from her. The breath in your lungs, your fingernails, your genetic signature, everything in the realm of the biosphere, all the fauna and flora come from her. They are all supported moment by moment by her living presence. She is a supernatural source of life that supports the phenomena of life. When you recognize that, you recognize her, give her her due, then you might be inclined to ask yourself this question. Well, if the Divine Mother Sophia has given me all this, what can I give her in return? What can I offer to her in recognition of her presence and her benevolence and the abundance of her generosity? Well, there's only one thing that you can offer to your Divine Mother that she doesn't give you, and that is self-love. It is not inherent in the genome. It needs to be claimed by the living human animal in the process of living. So you claim self-love. And when you have genuine self-love, then that is the one thing you can offer to her, because it is the only thing that she has not given you in the first place. So there it is. That's my conclusion. That's my solution. The perennial debate about the goodness of human nature can only be solved by seeing, admitting the necessity of self-love. Yes, You do have those capacities, those attributes innately in your genomic calibration, compassion, goodness, kindness, generosity, the willingness to help others. But they do not operate without the driver of self-love. And of course, that raises the question, what are the standards of genuine self-love as distinguished from narcissism? Well, this is a topic that you will find explored here and there throughout the school. But I want to leave you with the primary and imperative message that no practice in planetary tantra can succeed unless it is founded on genuine, enduring, impervious, and unconditional self-love. My final comment would be, in the form of a question, how can you see yourself in such a way that your self-perception supports and fosters self-love? Obviously, that self-perception is the key to acquiring self-love, isn't it? Well, the answer to that comes directly from the sacred narrative. If you see yourself and know yourself truly and deeply to be a magical child of the wisdom goddess, then you have the perspective in which you can develop, claim, and develop genuine self-love.